Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have had a massive, massive weekend. This is actually the first time since Endgame I have seen movie theaters this packed. And you know what I'm going to be talking about? Barbenheimer weekend. Barbie Oppenheimer coming out on the 21st. We're going to be covering both films, highs, lows, critiques, and of course our grades afterwards. We are on the 5-point Mario Brothers scaling system. This is your host, Brian, a.k.a. El Nino, and today I'm joined with...
I'm Kip, a.k.a. Kill a Disciple.
And we have a very special guest, one of our main sponsors here at Zero Dark Nerdy.
Steven, a.k.a. Sailfish Steve from Sailfish Comics.
Love it, love it. As you know from the intro, middle of the episodes, and outro, Sailfish Comics, they have been good friends of ours for quite some time now. Three locations across North Carolina, one right here in Greensboro across from Best Buy, one in Winston-Salem, and one in Concord. We'll get into more Sailfish stuff at the end, but right now we are going to get into the two hottest movies since the pandemic, Barbie and Oppenheimer. And we will go ahead and start with what's supposed to be the format. You're supposed to watch Oppenheimer first and then finish with Barbie. Kip and I ended up having to do the reverse because Oppenheimer was super sold out on Sunday.
Yeah.
So we had to watch Barbie first. And Steven, I believe you watched Oppenheimer first and then watched Barbie second. Is that correct?
I did. Yeah. I was at the very back for Oppenheimer. Not ideal seating, but you know, when you have the third largest box office weekend of all time, it's to be expected.
Yeah. Yeah, so we met up at the comic book store, and I know you're getting ready to go see Oppenheimer. So what was that experience like for you from beginning to end? I mean, I'm talking about as soon as you get, you know, checked in with your ticket, did you see it as packed? Because you went on Friday.
Yeah,
so and the opening day.
And it was packed. I thought I was a little surprised because the crowds were definitely more Barbie oriented. A lot of pink, a lot of balloons in the lobby and stuff. A lot of people looking like they were there to just have a good time as opposed to trudge through the, you know, I am become death destroyer of worlds kind of vibe. But overall, it was great. It's definitely, you know, the heavier of the two. You always expect that from Christopher Nolan, and he really delivered, you know, beginning to end, almost on two fronts. I feel like it's almost like two movies in one, and both of them are like at war with each other and how good they are and how well acted and how well they're depicted.
I'm really glad you said that, two movies in one, because I definitely got that vibe. This isn't your typical Christopher Nolan, I need to watch it five times for this movie to make sense, especially going back to Tenet,
right?
Inception as well. You know, I mean, for the exception of the Dark Knight trilogy and even some of his like other classics too, like The Prestige, I don't feel like this is one where you need to rewatch over and over and over again for it to make sense. Like Tenet, I always hear, hey, by the fourth time I watch it, it made sense to me. I'm not a fan of movies like that. I mean, right. I do like a little bit of, you know, mystique and things like that. But this one, I did feel like it was definitely two stories in one. But most importantly, you didn't have to feel like you were a rocket scientist to enjoy the film.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought, you know, there was the black and white elements to the confirmation hearing storyline versus the color of the other to really set them apart. And other than like Rami Malek being there in one and knowing, well, he hasn't said a line, so you know this has to come back somewhere. There's not a whole lot of like that you had to keep up with. It's not like Memento where you had to figure out, right, you know, where the whole thing was going the whole time.
Agreed. Kip, what were your thoughts on it?
I mean, it is a classic Nolan movie where things are told non-linear. And like I said, with Memento, I had to watch that probably four or five times just because I love the movie. It's probably my favorite Nolan movie still. I watched that several times. I'm like, yeah, you know, I didn't catch that the first couple go-arounds. This one, I mean, as long as you don't fall asleep, which I struggled. I'm not going to lie. I struggled a few times.
It was a struggle for me, too. Those movie theater seats are so comfortable.
Right. I knocked a few times. So I had to catch myself. You know. But, I mean, for the most part, I knew what was going on. And, again, you don't have to be a rocket science. But as somebody that studied, like, physics and, you know, engineering, mm-hmm. I love watching movies like that because I'm like, okay, give us our time to shine. You know, and everything has to be explosions, which there was a major explosion in it. But, you know, that wasn't really the focus of the movie. It was everything that led up to that. And that's what I liked about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree 100%. I mean, I'm one of those people to where I'm older now. I do appreciate a good nap. Anytime there's a downtime in a movie, especially as comfortable as the movie theater seats have gotten over the years. You know, there's definitely times where I was catching myself falling asleep, not because the movie was boring per se. You know, it's just it's a slow buildup. And that's what it is. That's what Christopher Nolan is known for. It's not dynamics in the beginning. I mean, for the exception of the Dark Knight series, you got to wait a little bit until you kind of see what's really going on.
Right.
And I thought the, you know, of all the cameos that we get and just performances, I thought the females really stepped up to the plate between Emily Blunt,
Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
Florence Pugh did, like, she had probably way less screen time than Emily Blunt, but she showed her, I mean, okay, I don't want to say showed her ass.
I mean, she literally did.
She did a great job with the little bit that she was in the movie. You know, like, she made a statement. You know, I feel like her scenes, just the way she was acting. I mean, she's coming up, man. Like, she's done, like, her resume is looking great at this point for somebody that's been in the, I guess, in the public eye for like less than 10 years.
Yeah. You know? I feel like it's Jennifer Lawrence and then Florence Pugh is right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Emily Blunt, I was kind of like, well, she's not getting as much to do, but then that last hour, she comes on real strong. Yeah,
that third act, like, that was her act right there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, 1,000%. Are there any takeaways, Stephen, for you in terms of, for one thing, I do find it impressive but also scary that the lengths that actors take to portray a character in terms of weight loss. We've seen Christopher Nolan in The Machinist, the drastic weight loss that Christian Bale went through. And apparently Cillian Murphy was eating one almond a day to get his face to be, I mean, his whole body really to be like that. So I don't know. I would just love to get your thoughts on this. I mean, do you feel like that's super extreme? Is that something that you would ever see yourself doing? Because to me, as much as I love cinema, I'm a very hangry person and just eating off three meals a day. So I can't imagine how hangry I get eating one almond a day to look the part of a specific role for a movie.
Yeah. And to be willing to do it, you know, obviously, like you said, Christian Bale had done it, and knowing that it's something that's going to be expected. It's like the opposite of like Kumail Nanjiani going through all the effort to get super ripped for Eternals and then not really being used and the impact that it has. So I think it's it's extreme, but I think, you know, when you get these like almost theater troops together, like Cillian Murphy has, I think, been in 6 Christopher Nolan movies now, and you got the cameo from Gary Oldman in this, going back to Dark Knight and other things. I think, you know, when the time comes, I think everyone wants to be doing their part, and if somebody else has gone to the wall for it, then they want to go through whatever they have to do to live up to the example that's already been set for Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. I mean, even Matt Damon went on record saying that he promised his wife some time off. And he said, unless Christopher Nolan calls me for a movie. Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, guess who was getting yelled at by the, I mean, I wouldn't say that he was getting yelled at, but I'm sure she was like, you got to be shitting me.
Yes.
But he didn't have to do any drastic weight gain or weight loss with it. But what's your thought when it comes to things like that too, Kip? I'd love to get your feedback on this.
I think that certain actors take it to the extreme. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I guess like with Christian Bale's example of The Machinist, that's what that role called for.
Right.
It's super unhealthy to do that, to have your weight fluctuate the way it you know, they may have to.
Yeah. Because we're not talking about just a couple pounds here. I mean, we're talking drastic. Yeah,
the guy was like, I think loss. He was like less than 100 pounds when he did the machinist. Yeah. You know? And I'm like, that's crazy. And I feel like he was hospitalized at one point. Mm. I don't know. I mean, I do a lot for a few million dollars, though. I mean, it's not like they're not doing it for almonds here. You know, they're getting paid. Yeah. They're being well compensated. Yeah. So, I mean, that, and also you turn in a good performance, that builds on your reputation as an actor. Mm. And you're going to have, you know, A-list directors wanting to work with you.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, I think especially when Christian Bale did The Machinist, it was like he was still trying to break away from the like Empire of the Sun, Newsies kind of Christian Bale. And the way the world saw him.
Yeah, he became like a legit like actor. Yeah. Turning in a good, you know, dramatic performance, and he became an A-lister probably from doing that. You know, I mean, he was what was that, Reign of Fire? Like he was doing stuff like
Reign of Fire.
You know, I don't know if that was before,
yeah,
but you know. I mean, he did other.
I mean, don't talk movies. Shit about Reign of Fire.
I mean, I liked it.
That
I mean,
movie,
his
rules.
Early, yeah, his earlier stuff, like Equilibrium, when he was in Equilibrium, that was great. Yeah. I love that movie. You know, that may have gotten him action roles because he killed that. But everybody wants to be in a Nolan movie. He's like the golden boy. You know, it's like it's working with Scorsese or like Oliver Stone or something like that. You know, Nolan, he's top tier. So, yeah, I mean, if he asked me to live off of 4 pebbles of kibble, you know, I'd probably end up doing it. You know, that means I'm going to be sitting at the Oscars waiting to hear my name called.
Sure.
You know?
And there's also very few directors out there that can go up to a studio and say, here's my project, here's what I need. And the studio says yes. Mm-hmm. Christopher Nolan solidified himself after, you know, I think a little bit before, but definitely after doing the Batman trilogy and then, of course, Inception. Right. And, you know, we'll get to Greta in a little bit because I feel like she's going to be in that aspect of it, especially in terms of female directors. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting to see new properties that are directed well, that are meant for theaters. Right. So, you know, before we get to Barbie, you know, let's go over again. You got to do this out of a scale of 5. And this time I'll start with you, Kip, and then I'll go to Steven. You know, where would you rank? And give me 2 rankings. I want to know, like, rewatchability ranking and then just your overall ranking of the film.
Okay. Rewatchability. I'm going to tell you, I don't think I could watch it in theater again. Now, I'm glad that I did watch it in theater because the sound was amazing.
Spectacular.
It was I can't imagine watching that for the first time at home. So definitely, if you have a chance to get out there to the theater, you're going to want to see it in the theater also just to support theaters right now. And again, you know, everybody that worked on that movie, I know they worked their asses off to make that. Based on just what I saw in the cinema, I would give it a, I don't know, is it like, we do whole numbers or do you?
You can do like at least do a half. Okay, like don't do like 0.15. Right,
so I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. Actually, for both. I mean, I'd say 4.5 out of 5 for just seeing it one time and then rewatchability. I would definitely watch it again, but at home in the comfort of my own home and probably in sections. You know, like I almost want it like a Tarantino intermission.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Because I made it all the way through without even going to the bathroom, and that was rough. So.
Same.
I would say I'm going to give it, you know, rewatchability. I'll definitely watch it. I always come around to every Nolan movie, no matter how, even if I'm not like, oh, I've got to, you know, figure it out again or anything. Like I watched Interstellar a couple weeks ago just because I don't know that I'd watched it since it came out. And I was like, oh, Timothée Chalamet was his son in that. Like had completely forgotten that. Nolan was ahead of the curve on that on top of everything else. So definitely, you know, a 5 out of 5 for rewatching. And I would say a 4 out of 5 as far as the movie itself. I think that, you know, I harp on this all the time, and my wife especially does, when I look at the runtime of something, even like the new Mission Impossible is 3 hours. And it's like, okay, well, people seem to think that this movie has to be 3 hours, so you feel like you got your money's worth out of it. But I think you could have cut out easily a half an hour, if not an hour, from Oppenheimer, and
I agree.
You would have just had a killer, all killer, no filler experience. So 4 out of 5, just for that reason.
Yeah, I agree with you. When Kip, myself, and a big shout out to our buddy Derek, who saw the movie with us, I felt as if I think I would have enjoyed this more, even though it was a great cinematic experience. So let me go ahead and start with that. Cinematic experience wise, I will definitely give this a 4 out of 5. Like, go watch this in theaters for the sound, the visuals, a Christopher Nolan experience, what you come to expect from a Christopher Nolan film. With that being said, this did feel all of 3 hours to me. You know, there's 3 hour movies that don't feel like 3 hour movies. Right. You know, Wolf of Wall Street to me is one where I could kind of just watch on whatever, but I've always been a Scorsese fan. I've always been a Christopher Nolan fan, but this did feel all of 3 hours. So you are correct, Steven. I think they could have knocked out, you know, half an hour to an hour of this film. Mm-hmm. And if they were to keep it the way it is, I would have preferred if it was an HBO special directed by Christopher Nolan on a Chernobyl,
like Chernobyl, yeah,
kind of,
yeah, moment. Yeah.
You know, that way it could have been a 6-part miniseries, let's just say, mm-hmm. where it could have kept people maybe engaged a little bit longer, because that is one of the main concerns. I mean, let's face it, we're in a world right now where we want everything fast, we want everything quick. And I mean, I feel like the three of us are cinephiles where we really enjoy the experience, but not everybody is like us. And I'm not saying Christopher Nolan makes movies for everybody. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people where they look at the time, and as soon as it's over 2 hours or 2.5 hours, immediately they just check out. They don't even want to give it a chance. So, I mean, that obviously didn't happen this weekend, because it has been the best weekend since COVID, the best box office weekend between this movie and Barbie since Endgame. So, I mean, yes, I will say go out and watch it, especially if you love Christopher Nolan movies. And most importantly, original content. You know, this isn't a remake. This isn't part 10 or part 12 or a part of an extended cinematic universe, which we have all grown to love. Right. And we can get to that in a little bit. you know, and that's what I love about Christopher Nolan. We know it's going to be, even when it was Batman, it didn't feel like the old Batman films, which I enjoyed. You know, I'm not going to take anything away from Tim Burton or anything like that. But he just has an eye for making things look real and look amazing, where it's not just super, super CGI focused.
Yeah.
And I really respect him for that.
And you know that when you see them building Los Alamos in the movie, that they're actually out there building a town for the sake of this movie and for his vision and stuff. So to see that old school filmmaking is very, very cool. Yeah.
But it was really good to just see the different demographics for both films across the board.
Yeah.
I felt like we saw a lot more with Barbie as far as the demographics.
So let's go ahead and get to Barbie on that. So Barbie, as far as stats go, so let me go ahead and run down some numbers for this weekend to show how absolutely massive this weekend was. So Barbie earned $337 million worldwide, and Oppenheimer brought in $174 million worldwide for a total combined gross of $511 million. Again,
that's one weekend.
Wow. And this is not a holiday weekend too. You know, holiday weekends numbers fluctuate a little bit because they come out on Wednesday. And I believe these two came out on Thursday, like the normal schedule goes. Mm-hmm. So biggest opening weekend since the pandemic, the fourth biggest opening weekend in box office history for two movies. And the ones before that were Endgame, Infinity War, and The Force Awakens. And I mean, we're talking those three movies carried that whole entire weekend. Where these two,
I can't even tell you what else came out.
When
these came out.
Yeah, you know? Complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
Right.
And the marketing, I mean, to me, it's genius in a way to where it's like, let's just get people out to the theaters and we'll let it go up to them. And it just happened. So before we get to Barbie, I mean, what was kind of your first take, Steven? Well, we'll start with you, like, especially with the Barbie movie coming out. Like, what were your thoughts? And then, you know, Kip, and then we'll just kind of go from there.
I've had a crush on Greta Gerwig since, like, Greenberg or something like that. You know, another Greta Gerwig, Noah Baumbach collaboration, and then Frances Ha and all that. So, you know, I've always been aware of her as long as she's been working, even going back to the movies with the Duplass brothers. in the early aughts and stuff. Saw Lady Bird, didn't love it. Saw Little Women, didn't love it. But her working and co-writing with Noah Baumbach was big for me. You know, going back to movies like Squid and the Whale and things like that, and getting that wry sense of humor to go with what she's brought in as a director, I think is what really put this one over the top for me.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, going into it, just off trailers and a little bit of a buzz, my daughter is a gigantic A24 fan and just a Greta fan in general. So she already loved Lady Bird. Her and I actually watched Little Women together, and I never seen the previous iterations of Little Women. I was just more impressed by the cast, and I enjoyed it. You know, it's not really my cup of tea. I'm going to tell you right now, if it was Little Women, if it was Little Women Oppenheimer, I would have been like, it's just going to be Oppenheimer weekend for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, seeing the cast and kind of getting a little bit of feedback that this was not going to be a PG movie is what got me a little bit excited about seeing it. And then we'll get into that a little bit. And then Pick, what was your first reactions to that?
Barbie pretty much had me at the first trailer. Like it gave me like 21 Jump Street vibes where I'm like, okay, so I'm not really supposed to take this seriously. They're not taking themselves seriously. It's right. A comedy, you know? And as I saw the next trailer, I was like, okay, this is more geared towards adults, but there's stuff. It's like the opposite where you go see a kid's movie, like the Lego movie, and then it has something for the adults. This seemed like it was for adults, but had something for the kids.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I was definitely more excited to see that than Oppenheimer, which is bad, I guess. I don't know. But I mean, Oppenheimer, I never felt more like an adult watching a movie before.
And we were just missing the suits.
That's how I felt. I felt like we just stepped off of like the suits.
Yeah.
Or like,
yeah.
Set to go watch this movie. But I had a great time with it. Like I didn't go in with high expectations.
Right.
I just wanted a good time. I wanted a few laughs, and it gave me everything I asked for. Mm-hmm. And I think that this will lead to bigger projects for her because she did a phenomenal job, you know, directing. It's kind of like, I mean, as far as like female directors, there's a small handful of,
yeah.
I mean, there's tons of them, but like the ones that we actually know,
right?
Very few, you know. Like you have somebody like Kathryn Bigelow, great director, and she directed a action movie, you know, and it's great. You know, Patty Jenkins, the first Wonder Woman and Monster, you know. I mean, she's going to be up there on that tier,
yeah.
I think going forward, and that's good for her.
And I mean, after this weekend, you know, the highest grossing weekend for any female director of all time. Directed Penny Marshall, you know, was one of my favorite directors growing up. I mean, League of Their Own, Big. Mm-hmm. Those are two of my favorite movies right there. So, I mean, it's great to see the comeuppance, I guess you could say, for someone like this. Because I feel like if not after Barbie, she is going to be in a Christopher Nolan type of Steven Spielberg. You know, all these directors that can just say, hey, here's my project. Throw me some money. I'm going to make it fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, same thing with Kip. I don't think I was hooked on the first episode or the first trailer. I was definitely like, I'm intrigued. It seems like it's going to be a fun movie. And let's face it, we're in the middle of a recession. You know, the world's at war with itself. We need more fun shit at the movie theaters.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Plain and simple. Yeah. And the one thing I will say, and Kip and I talked about this briefly, it's just crazy the propaganda bashing that's going on with it. It seems like you can't come out with anything without it being propaganda, no matter what the movie is.
Mm-hmm. There's always some agenda attached to it.
Right.
It's like, no, we're just a movie, guys.
And I tell you what, there was this TikToker who took all these one-star ratings and actually put it on one-star reviews and put it on the Barbie movie poster to make it like a legit like review, and it made me want to watch the movie even more. So it's great to like take these trolls that just want to just complain about every single thing on the planet, which people, can we just pump the brakes a little bit? Like, not everything is propaganda. Can there not be a good movie out there without there being a background message behind it?
Right.
And even if there is, so what? It's not paying your bills. It's not helping you get rich.
Right.
It's just there for entertainment purchases. I'm not brainwashed. I'm not going out to buy Barbies tomorrow.
Right.
You know, because then I saw that. I saw people were burning Barbies. I'm like, what is going on right now?
Yeah. Like, even if you hated the movie for whatever reason, it didn't ruin your day.
Right. You know,
it didn't ruin your day. Like, come on.
If pop culture is ruining your life that much, then please find an alternative. But
yeah.
I went in completely surprised. I brought my sister with me. My wife, Ashley, I love you. I know you're going to be listening to this episode. I got to call you out, though. She was a little bit too hungover to join us for the movie. So it was myself, my sister, Kip, Autumn, and then our good friends, Derek and Kate. And we all walked out of there smiling. I mean, it's 2 hours of just goofy, dumb fun.
You know? But you also get a happy ending for everyone. Like, I mean, we said we walked out of there feeling good. It's not like anyone was marginalized. And in the end, the Barbies are like, oh, man, we haven't been treating the Kens right. Like, there's a reason that they feel the way they feel, and they don't need to be the way they're being about it. But we need to change something about the way we've been acting, too.
Right. Yes. That's the message for both sides.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like, if you really look at it, it's like, oh, because like I'm sitting there watching, and it's like a lot of things didn't hit me as hard as it hit Autumn.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, there's a part where one of the characters is giving like this monologue. And if I was a woman, or, you know, a mother or something like that, I would have felt it a lot harder than she did. You know, and it's just like, I'm sort of looking at her, I'm like, wow, this is like, you know, and she gets pretty emotional when it comes to movies and TV shows and commercials and, you know, stuff like that. But it hit her really hard. I'm like, oh, wow. But at the same time, she was laughing the whole time, too.
Exactly.
So there was some of everything in this movie.
Exactly.
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. The comedy, that's what did it for me.
Yeah.
I mean, Ryan Gosling.
He's so good.
He's great. I mean, the fact this guy, like, if he won an Oscar for comedy, like, I would completely get it, because the guy, I'm not saying he carried the movie, but comedically, I would say he carried the movie. Like, I mean, just the Kens in general, Simu Liu, like him, and the guy that plays Gravik in Secret Invasion, I don't know his name yet. We will know his name.
Oh, we will.
After Bob Marley, we will know his name. But yeah, I mean, they did a great job. I mean, even Michael Cera, his part.
Oh, as what was it? Adam.
Alan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great. Will Ferrell was great, but he's usually, you know, he's Will Ferrell. He's going to give you, you know, what he's known for. Issa Rae, like, she was funny. I mean, I thought everybody had they did their part, and I loved it. So, yeah, I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
Comedy-wise, here's how you know. I mean, this movie will stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I guarantee you, and I've already seen it happening, we are all going to be calling our homes Mojo Dojo Casa Houses. Plain and simple.
Mojo Dojo Casa House.
And then I love how they're like, you know, you don't have to say that at the end.
Yeah, you don't have to say.
But it's so great. So even as Dojo, if we would have seen it for my barbecue this past weekend, I would have been like, this is the Mojo Dojo Casa House barbecue. What's your rating on Barbie, bud?
I give it a 5 out of 5.
Love it. Love it.
Hold on.
Before you say anything more. Here it is.
Yeah. I don't think there was anything in the whole movie that was wasted. I think that there were, you know, there's musical numbers, there's fight scenes, there's cameos, like the old woman on the bus stop bench when Barbie meets her. That is Barbara Handler that they talk about in the movie, who is inspiration.
It's not. No, she's actually a costume designer that's friends with Greta Gerwig.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
my mistake then. No, it's fine. But
everybody thinks.
But yeah, I just don't feel like there was any scene that was wasted. I think that there are things that I want for movies that I'll still go see everything. Like No Hard Feelings, it was fine, but I still want there to be room for quotable comedies and R-rated comedies in the marketplace. So I went to see it, and after, when I went out with my friends to eat after the movie, we were all quoting lines from Barbie already. Like, anytime anything that has gone well, the last couple days, it's been sublime. Like, you know, I think it's going to be, as a comedy, stand the test of time, like you said, the same way Anchorman or Dodgeball or any other great comedy does. And then it had a ton to say in the same way that a movie like Everything Everywhere All at Once or Vengeance did last year, where it hits you emotionally too.
You got a second air horn for that, brother. I tell people all the time, I'm like, in the early 2000s, before we had memes and GIFs, it was quotes from movies, right. And Anchorman was one of them.
Yeah.
So I will give this definitely a 4.5 out of 5. I actually cannot wait to watch this movie again. I did tell Ashley, she was like, well, would you go to the theaters again? Maybe. I mean, we got a lot of other stuff coming out. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, but it's one of those, like, if it's on TV, I'm probably going to watch it. I'm going to put it on.
Yeah.
You know,
rewatchability.
I'm actually going to change my. I gave it a 4. I'm going to go to a 4.5.
There we go.
You know what?
There we go.
Okay. You know what? Like, I can see myself watching this before I watch Oppenheimer.
There you go.
You know, and I'm like, again, if it's on streaming, I'm like, it's on up.
Okay, right. That's what I'm watching. Like, I like to call those my TNT and TBS movies.
Right.
If it's on TV, you're going to watch it.
No matter what point it's on.
Yeah.
Like, if a third of the way through, you're like, I guess I'm riding this out.
Yeah. So, agree.
And I think we've only seen the first, you know, the biggest opening weekend for a female director ever, the fourth largest weekend ever, you said. Mm-hmm. But I think whatever streamer gets Barbie is going to see a bump once it goes on there too. And it'll be like Barbie sleepovers and stuff, the same way you saw people going out for it. So I think it's only halfway through its cultural phenomena too.
Right. And I'm sure, I mean, I know we have a limited amount of drive-in theaters out there, but I could definitely see this being a hit. I don't know about both. I mean, to me, 5 hours is a lot to spend. I mean, there's people that have done it, that did both movies in the same day, and God bless all of you that did it.
I don't know how.
I could not. I don't care how good they both are. 5 hours is a lot. So, excellent. Before we wrap up, though, Steven, I want to let the fans know a little bit more about Sailfish Comics. They've been hearing about you, you know, really since the last couple of years now. You know, tell them just a little bit about how Sailfish got started, where you guys are going, and like, what are what's the new hot shit coming out here in the next few weeks?
Sailfish started 17 years ago. My business partner, Brett Parks, he had been teaching English in Korea, saving up money, selling, you know, whatever region locked DVDs of Eraserhead and selling Transformers you couldn't get anywhere else, drop shipping them to the US to make his nest egg to open the store. Came back, opened the store, and I was the first guy there helping him pull subscriptions as soon as he opened. Like, I remember going to pick up books from him when he was still painting the walls. And then fast forward 10 years and I wanted a piece of something for my own.
Yeah.
Got together with Brett, opened up our own shop in Greensboro. And then 3 years after that, we had hired a kid named Colton. He wanted to make his bones as well. We set him up down in Concord. So that's kind of how the Manifest Destiny has progressed. Awesome. As far as the new hotness, we have Ultimate Invasion going on. That's the big Marvel summer event. DC's turned things a little more horror-oriented with Night Terrors across their whole line of books. And there's always new stuff to try. We just had an exclusive variant featuring our puppy Lois for a new book called Scrapper that's like Blade Runner meets Homeward Bound, kind of stray dogs in the dystopian future solving crimes. So that's a lot of fun. And especially if you like the movies that you saw this weekend, there's especially Oppenheimer, Jonathan Hickman, who's written a bunch for the Avengers and stuff. Mm-hmm. He teamed up with a guy named Nick Patara back in 2009, and they did a book called Manhattan Projects.
Oh. Okay.
Where it posits as the atomic bomb being the tamest thing that they created, and really they were just like completely unhinged and no government oversight, creating dimensional portals and dealing with aliens and stuff like that too. And that deals with Oppenheimer and Leslie Groves, a lot more Richard Feynman than we got in the movie and things like that. So that's kind of a old backlist title that's evergreen right now.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, I know you guys normally, I think about once a month, do an event at your like side location in Greensboro. Do you have any upcoming events with the warehouse coming up?
Yeah, our warehouse is located at 929 behind the Field Trip Performance Space, or 929 North Church Street. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about it today. I think we're looking at August 18th and 19th. So the afternoon of Friday, August 18th, and then the morning into the afternoon of Saturday, August 19th for the next warehouse sale. And that's a chance where we have a lot of dollar books, kind of overstock clearance toys. We also have some premium back issues that even having three stores, we just don't have room for everything that we want to get out there. So that's some extra space to come and find some hidden gems.
Love it. Love it. For those of you watching, I mean, I would say half of this is thanks to our friends at Sailfish Comics here in the background. So Steven will be joining us at least once a month minimum to, you know, talk about all things comic books, comic cons, action figures, the whole entire nine yards. Kip, thank you so much for joining us.
Man, always a pleasure.
Yeah.
You guys hang out for just a second. All right, party people, that is going to wrap up our latest episode of Zero Dark Nerdy. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate all the love and support. Big thank you to our sponsors, betonline.ag for all your sports betting needs. And of course, the Believe Podcast Network. And we could not be here without our main sponsors. That is Sailfish Comics for all your comic book, graphic novel, toys, posters, the whole nine yards. They got it all. Three locations in North Carolina, one in Greensboro, right across from Best Buy on Stanley Road, one location in Winston-Salem, and one in Concord, right outside of Charlotte. On behalf of everyone here at Zero Dark Nerdy, be sure to check us out on social media, all across the board, Zero Dark Nerdy, and of course, our website, popculturepodcast.com, courtesy of our good friends over at Zibster, Z-I-B-S-T-E-R, for all your website and SEO needs. Have a good one. Be good to each other out there, and we'll see you next time. Peace.
Yeah! Victory!
And anger management?
Fuck anger management.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.